Good morning, Mac Ernie here, National Post Radio. In 15 minutes, we are going to Ottawa. Chris Selle is there, columnist for the Post. He's covering the Manning Center Conference, getting underway there as well. But we want to talk to him about something he was writing about in yesterday's edition of the paper, the legacy of former Ontario Premier Dalton McGuinty. Chris was in attendance at Queen's Park when the former Premier's official portrait was unveiled and broken out. So it's going to be interesting to have that chat with him, find out how Mr. McGuinty looks a couple of years out of office with a government that is succeeding him. Same party, but different government, of course, under Premier Wynne. How is his legacy held up? It's an interesting conversation, some nuance to it that that might surprise you. Chris will be here in about 15 minutes. Andy Burns coming in at the bottom of the hour. We're going to wrap up the conversation we started on Tuesday, our Oscars look ahead. We already talked about Best Picture and Best Actor. Today, we're going to talk Best Director and Best Actress. So we'll get our predictions in early. I'm very excited to say I have now seen three of the eight Best Picture nominees. By my standards in recent years, that is actually pretty good. I'm actually doing okay on that front. That has been better than my average. I might even be able to get that all the way to five by the time the movies the winners are announced on Sunday. Right now, I want to bring Joanna Baron onto the conversation. She is the director of the Runnymede Society, a new group that she is part of along with, and this is where I do disclosure, Marnie Supkoff is part of the effort as well. She's a friend of mine. She's a columnist for the Post and the director of the Canadian Constitution Foundation. You hear her regularly here on National Post Radio. She's involved in the project as well. Joanna, as well, you are also doing this with my lifelong best friend since we were 7 years old playing hockey together, Asher Honickman. He runs a legal think tank in Toronto as well. So you and I have never met, but I know a lot of people you know. They told me you're up to something really cool. I believe them. Tell me, what are you doing?
I'm certainly in great company, and it's good to know about that history with you and Asher. I'll make sure to make fun of him.
Well, I've got lots of stuff. Tell me what you need, and I will supply.
So we're really excited. I just started as director of the Runnymede Society, which is the project of the Canadian Constitution Foundation and the Advocates for the Rule of Law, which is Asher's project. I started a few weeks ago, and as you know, we wrote a sort of introduction to Canadians in full comment in the National Post yesterday, introducing the motivation and the concerns that gave birth to the Runnymede Society. So essentially, it's a group of people from sort of wide-ranging views on judicial interpretation, legal interpretation across the spectrum in terms of partisan politics, but united by a desire to add more rigor and diversity and clarity to the legal debate in Canada.
What is interesting about this is how it sounds on first blush like the sort of thing, Joanna, and nothing negative is intended by this, mm-hmm. but it sounded to me like the sort of thing that would be really compelling for legal wonks and aficionados and not necessarily anyone else, until I started to kind of look at some of the rationale and then that went into forming the society. Our laws are changing quickly. They're evolving quickly. In some ways, you might actually be pleased with that. You might like some of the rulings that are coming down. You might think that they're good things for society, but you might be concerned with how the rulings and the changes have been reached. And that's the nuance that interested me here.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you really hit the nail on the head that, you know, those of us who are involved in the project, and we have a sort of network of law professors and students that are ready to go, as well as Marnie, Asher, and I, we might disagree specifically on, you know, whether the Supreme Court ought to be engaging in judicial decision making on things like assisted suicide or collective bargaining rights. I know Asher is very concerned about judicial activism, and Marnie and I have different views about that, but all of us are concerned about the process. It's not so much the outcome as the process. You know, like what steps did you take to get you to that destination? And how can we ensure that if the stakes were different, for example, if the political climate were different, if it was less sort of democratic and liberal, then, you know, what outcomes could you justify at that point? If you become untethered from some sort of stable interpretive framework, then what can happen? And so all of us have sort of grave concerns about that. And there's also just a legal clarity problem. How can we be subject as a society and as individuals to the rule of law if we don't know what the law says?
Let's actually kind of strip away some of the theoretical discussion here, Joanna. Could you offer the listeners an example? It could be hypothetical. It could be real to life. Mm-hmm. Something that would be one of these instances recently where we've seen a judicial decision that would potentially be of interest to you and your society.
Yeah, so I think one example was the Supreme Court of Canada's recent Saskatchewan Federation of Labour Board case, which constitutionalized a right to strike among public sector unions. And what was interesting about it is, in contradiction to some other sort of big recent charter cases with the Supreme Court of Canada, there was no reference to social science data, explaining why public sector union employees should be allowed to sort of organize themselves in de facto cartels, and privilege themselves amongst other sort of actors in the free market. And it was interesting to me because in Carter, in the assisted dying case, there was a wealth of social science data that the Supreme Court talked about and talked about how important it was to their reasoning. Whereas in Sask Federation of Labor, which has as sweeping consequences for everyday Canadians as the assisted dying cases, it was just sort of posed as axiomatic that, you know, of course, public sector union employees have the right to strike. And so it concerns me, you know, whichever way you come down on it. And there are certainly reasons to critique judges starting to become social scientists as well. It was just the discrepancy between the two approaches was disconcerting.
What would be something that the Runnymede Society could perhaps get involved in? I mean, I think there are a lot of people out there who do follow this, who are worried about this. And their political perspectives, as you've already noted, may vary. They may feel good about one decision, less good about another. Mm-hmm. It's a process issue, whereas you have said, and I think you've said it well, we don't always know what our law will be, and we should have laws that are at least as much as possible predictable. I guess the issue then becomes, how do we start to address that issue? What is some of the work potentially that you and the Runnymede Society could be doing to take these issues on?
Well, we're really we're starting from a very sort of early and low perspective, in the sense that what we're aiming to do is first point out the problem and then provide the context and the forum to debate the problem. Because really, Ash and I were both in law school in recent years. There's not even a forum for debating these things. If you were to raise the argument that I just raised, or the critique of the Saskatchewan Labour Board decision in, you know, a first-year constitutional law class, it just wouldn't get much airplay. So those types of perspectives are not fostered at all in law school. So the first thing is to say to students, you know, hey, we'll give you a forum and we'll help you and we'll provide you support to debate the issues of the day and to bring in speakers and to sort of foster an intellectual network of professors and practicing lawyers such as Asher's group and students that are all committed to the rule of law in one way or another. And of course, we respect a sort of multiplicity of approaches to that.
It would be interesting to see this going forward here, because, I mean, Joanna, I am by no means a legal expert. I have a lot of exposure to the law and through judicial decisions through the work that I do. I do have to kind of have a basic literacy, I guess we could use the term, so that I can keep up with what's going on out there. But one of the tricky things is that unless you are the Supreme Court, you can't really change what the Supreme Court has done. You already cited the example of with the public sector right to strike, where a Supreme Court had reversed an earlier decision it had made. They're the only people in society that could do that. We've seen that as well with the assisted suicide issue as well. Only the Supreme Court could return to the previously litigated issues of the Supreme Court. What do you do from the ground up if you think the Supreme's got it wrong? I mean, how do you go about trying to get that fixed? Do you have to wait a generation and try again?
Well, so this is where I'm actually optimistic with the grassroots aspect, because, you know, there is a sort of very concrete, I would say, ecology, if that's not too labored of an analogy, of how legal arguments and interpretations and waves of thought come about. Which is, it starts in law school, you learn different approaches to legal thought, you get inspired by a legal professor, You make arguments, you become a lawyer, you go to the Court of Appeal or to the Supreme Court, you make those arguments, and a judge picks up on the thread and then puts it in his decision, and then it's law. So it's really, you know, the law is where the rubber really hits the road. So yes, it might take some years, but you must start somewhere, and there's a real sort of direct line between law schools and the law, which is why I wanted to become a lawyer in the first place, because you can see the effects almost immediately, if not immediately, at least within a few years.
Let's talk for a minute here, and point granted that you've already said you're kind of just at a very early stage with this. The Runnymede Society is new. You're new in the role. You're getting your legs under you, finding out what to do. What goes into part of that process? I mean, what do you look forward to as your first challenge here? Or, because I know all new societies like to pick a fight early, where do you see that first opportunity? What do you want to go out there and take on? You don't want to be tilting at windmills. You want to find something you can really sink your teeth into. I don't want you to tip your hand too much, but what excites you about the project? What opportunities do you see coming down the pipe?
Well, you know, the first opportunity has been that just since we've, you know, written things in the Post and sort of the project has become public, a lot of really wonderful people have started coming out of the woodwork, law students, professors, academics, some of which are, by the way, would not identify as being, you know, sympathetic to conservative, textualist, originalist, libertarian perspectives at all, but who are sympathetic with the idea that there needs to be more healthy debate. So there's been the sort of, you know, just, you know, heartwarming part of people coming to us. We are going to be having a few events across Canada in the next few weeks. We'll be having a debate on positive rights, which is basically, you know, encompassed in the labor rights example, whether the charter should encompass what are now called social and economic rights. We're going to be having a debate on that at Queen's University next week, in fact, on March 1st. And then I'll be going out to Alberta, and we'll also have some interesting events on sort of hot button issues. In fact, at the University of Alberta, we'll be debating the social and economic rights and right to strike issue. We'll have one professor who will defend that the charter protects, that Section 2D of the charter protects the right to strike, and another professor who will take the contrary position. So that's been the fun, initial steps. I'm not looking to pick any sort of, you know, contested fights just yet. But there certainly are, you know, issues where you can, you know, get some healthy dialogue going.
Yep, I think it's probably very true. Let's actually end on that, Joanna. I mean, obviously, you do want to get a healthy dialogue going. What are you going to be working on to do that? And how can people learn more about the Runnymede Society?
So, as I say, we'll be having events across the country in the next few weeks. Hopefully, we'll be doing some in the Toronto area, as well as in Alberta, and possibly Quebec. If you are interested in getting involved in any capacity, and our events will be as much as sort of logistically possible, open to the public, you can email me at jbaron, J-B-A-R-O-N, at theccf.ca. And we'd love to hear your ideas and perspectives.
Thanks so much for this. It's good stuff. I'm excited to see where this goes, because I think there's definitely room for it. And I also think the more, you know, the United States has so many great organizations fighting it out in the marketplace of ideas. Canada, unfortunately, has fewer. And I think it's always great to see more competition, more ideas kicking around, more people working harder at that stuff. Joanna, welcome to the club, so to speak. It's good to have you doing this work. I suspect we'll talk again in the future. In the meantime, congratulations on the new gig. Have fun with it and stay in touch.
Thanks so much.
All right, good to have you here. Joanna Baron is the director of the new Runnymede Society. She's working with the Canadian Constitution Foundation and advocates for the rule of law. The Canadian Constitution Foundation, of course, is headed up by Marni Supkov. You hear her regularly here on National Post Radio, an old friend of mine, a columnist of the paper. Advocates for the Rule of Law is a think tank based out of Toronto, established and run by one of my very best friends. So Joanna came to me directly from the source. Some of my friends, people I trust, said, this is a very impressive young woman doing very impressive things, and you should meet her. So we thought, why not? Bring her on. Have a chat. Coming up in a couple of minutes, another very impressive young person, Chris Selle. He's in Ottawa covering the Manning Conference, but he had a very interesting column earlier in the week. We want to bring him on. We want to talk to him a little bit about the legacy, good, bad, ugly, indifferent, conflicted, however you want to describe it, of Dalton McGuinty, the former Premier of Ontario. It's Matt Gurney. It's National Post Radio. We are back in a minute. You're listening to Sirius XM Canada Talks, Channel 167.